Dawn Fotopoulos, hello.
Hello, how are you, Joe? Good to see you.
It's long time no see. This is Labors for Neighbors. Thank you for being a guest. I met you at Redeemer Presbyterian Church many years ago. You wrote a book called Accounting for the Number Phobic, but really it's almost photopolophobic. You know, you have such a power that it's unnerving. And I'll repeat the title because I'll put a screenshot at the end, hopefully. Accounting for the Number Phobic, a survival guide for small business owners. Before we do that, how did you find out about Redeemer Presbyterian Church all those years ago?
I was attending a different church in New York. Okay, this is this is me speaking about the truth. Those were the years when I was looking for a lifetime spouse, right? And the ratios were really bad in the church that I was going to. And someone said to me, you got to go to Redeemer because there are more men there, which hasn't served me terribly well, to be quite honest. But I went because the ratios were supposed to be better.
You're unfortunately rich. it's those two things, Dawn. And why would you ever get rid of good looks? Why would you ever get rid of smarts? You
Thank
wouldn't.
You,
and
Joe.
Yet there's a consequence to it.
It's a consequence. Oh, I never thought singleness was my ministry, but apparently for all these years, I guess it has been. But the final chapter has not been written yet, so I refuse. I refuse to give up the ship, but it's interesting. Yeah.
Do you still go to Redeemer Presbyterian Church?
You know what? I've been out of the city for quite some time with the COVID virus and other things. So I have not been an active member of Redeemer for a little while.
Who in your upbringing gave you, I assume you got it from someone, your love of numbers, your love of math?
Well, here's the ironic thing. Okay. I never had a love of math. In fact, I was number phobic myself. And all of my board scores throughout the years, I was like off the charts in reading and English. And I was like Midland when it came to mathematics. It was never intuitive for me. It was always difficult. I had to really apply myself. There were certain of the mathematical disciplines like geometry that I loved, because to me that was spatial, and I think spatially, and I won't go into all of what that means, but the real hard number crunching stuff just never really became intuitive to me until I started my own business. And then it had to be, then I needed to understand it because it was life or death.
What drove you to your first business? What was your first business?
Oh, my first business was Bedazzled, and my father, who's no longer on the earth, affectionately nicknamed it Bedraggled, which gives you a little sense of the gestalt about what a tough business it was. And basically, my partner, who is an award-winning graphics designer, Lisa Parsley, designed these gorgeous, they were almost like murals, and we screen printed them on cotton knitwear, and then we cut these huge t-shirts out of them. And we sold them as beach cover-ups and all sorts of stuff. Lands End Yacht Stores was one of our clients. And that was like, we were like the dog that caught the bus, right?
It was a successful business.
It was successful in the fact that we didn't go bankrupt, which is miraculous. You know, it didn't change my life financially, but it certainly taught me a lot in the School of Hard Knocks.
Wow.
And there's, you know, we could do a two-hour interview just on Bedazzled alone, but I realized kind of the hard way that I better wrap my mind around things like gross margin, because you don't run your business on revenues. You run it on gross margin or gross profit, which is the same thing. Because from there, you get to pay all your expenses. And if your gross margin isn't chunky enough, then you're going to end up really in the red. And so I'm learning this in real time. Now, I have a Cornell education, okay? And you would think that, you know, Cornell does a great job in educating. And as a college professor, which I am right now, I realized that there was so much that was missing. And I also have a graduate degree, right? But you shouldn't have to spend an additional $250,000 to understand the basics of how to read a P&L. And you know,
What is a P&L?
A profit and loss statement. Oh, sorry about that. My clock is going off.
No. But, But who in your family, I mean, I feel,
yeah,
I've never asked you about your family, but it's just obvious 3 feet away that you have a well put together, probably educated family. Is your mom or dad a professor or college educated?
Well, interestingly enough, I was the first generation to become college educated. My father always wanted to become a lawyer, but he was a child of the Depression. His parents were immigrants.
Wow.
His mother was illiterate, and he was supporting the family at 11 years old.
Wow.
So education was a luxury. It really was a luxury.
He was a hard worker.
A very hard worker. He worked 3 jobs my whole life. I thought everybody's father did that. But he was an engineer, and he was a brilliant man. And he took care of all the fountains in New York City. So the fountain in front of the Plaza Hotel, the fountain at Columbus Circle,
wow,
the clock in Central Park. Yeah, and these are all very unique installations. They didn't come with owner's manuals. So Dad had to sort of figure it out. He knew hydraulics and structures and mechanical and electrical.
So you have some engineering in you.
I think I actually do. And, you know, it's interesting because that bodes well for understanding numbers. But what's really interesting about numbers is numbers explains our universe. It explains our world. And numbers, you know what I joke in the book, I say, you know, does everybody remember that scene in The Wizard of Oz where Dorothy is shaking and the Tin Man is shaking and they're in the presence of the Grand Wizard, you know, and all the lights and the flames and he's booming and whatever. And the dog jumps out of, right, Dorothy's basket and he runs over to the curtain and everybody's horrified, like the dog is going to get snuffed out. And instead what he does,
It's all fake.
And he's just a little short man from Kansas, right? So that's what numbers are. Hmm. They're just little short men from Kansas. And if you go in with the mindset that, you know what, it's not the big Wizard of Oz with the booming voice that's going to kill me. It's actually just a little short man from Kansas. And then what we can do is change your mindset and say, okay, we're going to take you in the shallow end of the pool and just teach you this one thing. And so, for example, Joe, we use a car dashboard because most people who are adults drive and they're familiar with a car dashboard and they're familiar with certain things. So, for example, a gas gauge doesn't tell you to go buy gas. It doesn't. All it does is measure how much gas is in your gas tank. It's all it does. It's a little needle and it calibrates, right? But it's up to you to figure out that when that needle starts to go towards the E, you better do something about it. Otherwise, you're going to be in deep yogurt.
See, Dawn, this is why your book is so popular, is because you're talking about things like that even I understand. I get it. Oh, and I've always had this fury with math teachers. I remember very clearly in my math classes, they rarely taught the real world application. They rarely set it up as a real world thing. And so it was this theoretical monster behind the curtain.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And you don't lose that intimidation unless somebody says, here, take my hand. Let's talk about something that you already know and that's familiar and that's comfortable and it's intuitive.
Why don't math teachers teach more, present it more realistically, more real worldlistically?
I think a lot of people don't know how. And I also think that math teachers particularly are given a prescription from the Board of Education that they have to teach it a certain way. And I think they have to stick to that, otherwise they lose their jobs. But I didn't have that constraint, right?
Was the book more popular than you expected?
No, because I knew that there were a lot of people in pain. Mm. And I knew that the book would relieve a lot of pain. And I'll tell you what, nobody wants to write a book. Only masochists write books. It takes a tremendous amount of time. And actually, the book cost me $30,000 because I had to pay for the illustrator. I had to pay for the copy editor. I had to pay for the publicist. So, you know, so nobody writes a book because they're going to earn money. But I'll tell you what, Joe. The book really was a blog. Many years ago, I was giving some talks to small business owners about I hate numbers, accounting for the number phobic. And basically, I was just teaching them how to read their financial dashboard the same way you read your car dashboard. And I joked with them and I said, you know what your numbers are, what your financials are, they're your spouse. Yeah, they're your spouse and they're always talking to you, but can you hear what they're saying? And don't be surprised when you wake up one morning and you see the bankruptcy note on the kitchen table and you go, oh, I never saw it coming. Well, all the signs were there all along. You just couldn't read them. So at any rate, I gave a series of talks and everybody was like, oh my gosh, this is like radioactive. How come I didn't learn this 15 years ago when I started my business? And what I'll say to them is, well, okay, I'm going to take what I'm saying here, I'm going to put it in articles on a blog, which I did for like 8 years. And a colleague of mine would come into my office, Dr. Tony Bradley, and he'd pick up a book, any book, and he'd point to it and he'd go, you got to do one of these. And I said, no, I don't want to write a book. I don't want to write a book. I don't want to take 2 years out of my life to write a book. Nobody needs to hear from Dawn Fotopoulos. Who the heck is Dawn Fotopoulos? Why should I listen to her? No. And he did that for like 3 solid years. And then finally, I got so sick and tired of just saying the same things over and over again. And I would say to somebody, well, go read these 3 articles on my website and then come and talk to me about your particular situation. Because you don't, I can't educate every single person from the ground up and then have a contextual conversation.
What was the writing of the book, was the creation, was the publishing of it, was the response to it, has it been gratifying?
It's been very gratifying. And if you look at the 130 plus comments that we have on Amazon, it's a 5-star book. The book is designed to be a breakthrough, to break through the intimidation and the dryness of the topic. Mm-hmm. And so the book is illustrated by a Disney artist. I didn't know if you knew that, Joe, but I hired this guy who actually is a very funny man. And the book has a very cheeky kind of sense of humor. So you would normally never take accounting or financial statements and humor and put those two things together because, you know, it's numbers. We got to be serious. No, we don't. We don't have to be serious, but we do have to be hard-hitting.
Dawn, I respected your book from afar. I haven't read it, but I respected it immediately when I heard the title, when I knew you. And so I knew you and the title, and I said, ooh, this is very, very good. But my question right now is King's College. Mm-hmm. You are a professor.
I
think you've been a professor at King's College since 2004?
Yes.
Did you aspire to be a professor?
No. And I'll tell you, you know, God's ways are not our ways. So in the early 90s, I was a banker. And I ran P&Ls that were like $130 million to about $250 million at Citibank.
Well, we don't have much time left, Dawn. And I'm so sorry because this is so crazy interesting. Put in a plug for King's College. Why should someone attend King's College besides the fact that you teach there?
Well, King's College has a core curriculum that harkens from the 18th century Oxford. It's called the Politics, Philosophy, and Economics Core. And then we teach business on top of that. And the reason why you come to King's is because you will be prepared for the real world. Most higher education is being is called into question right now because students are getting their parchment and they are completely unprepared to function in the world. Our students are world beaters because they get a fabulous education. And they understand, they get real history, not make-believe history. They understand Old and New Testament because we learn from the ancients. And then I teach the business disciplines on top of that. I lean heavily on Harvard Business School case studies, as my colleagues do. And by the time they get out there in the world, their bosses call me and they say, I got graduate students that don't understand what your students do. Send me as many of these as you possibly can.
Wow.
I'll find jobs for them because they're not only smart, but they're humble and they're teachable and they're amazing. So all you have to do is look at our alumni and see what they're doing. And within 3 to 5 years, I mean, they're doing amazingly well. So the reason you come to King's is to get a real education so that you're prepared for the real world. And I wish I had gotten the education at Cornell that I'm giving to my students at King's.
Wow.
That's the bottom line.
Dawn Fotopoulos, you have been an amazing guest. Thank you for stooping to come on the show. Laborers for Laborers. No, you did. But thank you. And it's been a wonderful blessing. My wife hates me to use that word because I overuse it. But today, you are a blessing to my audience. Thank you. And keep up the good work. You're doing phenomenal work. Hip, hip, hooray.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Great to see you. Good to reconnect.
Bye.